Hello and welcome to The Two Tones. The Two Tones are Tony Moclair and Tony DeBolfo. Tony DeBolfo, how
are you going? Tone, how are you?
I'm very well. We're up at episode 7. We're up at, if you add Chris Judd and Greg Williams, you get episode 7. Number 7's fame? I mean, wow. They're two of the greatest players in the history of the club.
Brett Ratton and the great Wayne Johnston.
Exactly.
Dylan Buckley, I think, might have got around in 7 for a period. And now Matt Kennedy is doing the number proud circa 2018 time. But you mentioned, I think, Williams and Judd.
Yeah.
In those halcyon days of the early, mid-90s time, there was a theory of probability that used to do the rounds. It wasn't the theory of relativity, but the theory of probability, which read Williams plus Kernahan equals goal.
Yeah.
Or in other words, 2 plus 4 equals 6.
Oh, that's nice.
I used to dine out on that one many a Monday morning after the latest Carlton onslaught, Tony, through 95.
Well, look, that is in the past, but however, based on some of what we saw, a lot of what we saw on the weekend, Tone, it may not be in the too distant future. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but you've got to say congratulations, West Coast, 10-9-69 to 10-19-79. We know West Coast were very inaccurate. I'm going to start off, we're going to review the game, but can I firstly say, coming after the horrible game in Adelaide against North Melbourne,
In Tassie.
I wouldn't have been surprised if the crowd was down to 15,000, given it was a West Coast game. There was a great crowd at the MCG for this game.
And that tells me, Tony, and perhaps yourself also, that Carlton people understand where this team is at, but
yes,
more importantly, where it's going.
Yeah.
And I couldn't agree more. And, look, you talk about the inaccurate kicking of West Coast, which I guess was a bit of a mitigating factor. But, you know, when you think of those crucial turnovers, I think Samo coughing up that goal at
yes,
the other end.
And Ploughman missing that mark.
Yeah. Well, you take those two errors out of the equation and we win.
Yeah.
So that's how tight the contest was, I guess, for the most part. And, I mean, look, there were so many things to like about this performance, and we don't for one moment accept losses. We don't.
Yep.
We can't. But if you look at it in terms of the bigger picture, I mean, Carlton hung in. I mean, that was a great thing that they did hang in. Yes, there were lapses again. You know, I think there was something like 7 of 10 goals kicked in red time.
Yes.
In the second and third quarters, which, again, to me, tells me that this is a side that perhaps isn't quite capable of turning in solid four-quarter performances at this stage, but obviously it's something they're working on. But putting that to one side, Tone, there was so much to like about the performances of some of our players in this game. It's hard to know where to start, actually.
Well, that's Brenton Bolden mentioned that in the press conference, and he was kind of at pains to point out the unity in the group.
Yes.
And the quiet conviction with which Brenton Bolden said, we know where we're going.
We know where we're going.
That was very telling.
Very telling, Tone. And that was actually corroborated by Sam Rowe,
who said
that we as players know where we're at.
Yep.
And where we have to get to. They understand the scenario that confronts them, and they embrace it. And everyone's on the same page, and that's Carlton United, Tone.
I'm into that, Tone. Let's start with, I think, where we should start. There just aren't words. I mean, I don't know how many active words there are in the English language. There aren't enough to describe, and you know what I'm talking about. There simply aren't enough superlatives to describe Paddy Cripps. It was first game as captain, the first of many. His legs bestride the ocean. He is godlike.
He's a phenomenal footballer, isn't he? And I suppose he was thrown into the deep end literally in Tasmania with Mark Murphy's late withdrawal. So effectively he captained the team into that particular game.
Yeah.
But given the mantle this week, you know, you talk about a captain's game, you know, and this was it, wasn't it? I mean, you know, from the first bounce, the fellow just contested every ball. And geez, he's a great footballer. And, you know, I think if you're playing the same team as Patrick Cripps, you're running down the race behind him, you're following him out onto the ground, you can't help but be inspired by the way he takes the game on. And He just loves the heat. And, you know, to see him, you know, barnstorming his way out of the centre with, you know, two, three blokes hanging off him.
Yeah.
And somehow firing the ball out to someone, you know, better place, whether it was Zach Fisher or whoever it might have been.
No, not only that, that happens at every contest. Yeah. That he's got blokes hanging off him. And it's his first, second, third effort. He's after that ball like a diabetic is after his insulin. It is life and death. And him and what I was doing was watching it and then turning to the replay or you know, when they do the live of what's going on, you get a better perspective on the big screen. Cripps' work rate in the packs is astonishing. Yes. You watch him, he's...
Yeah.
He's possessed.
Yeah, he is possessed and way betide anyone that gets in his road. I mean, I just love the way... Like, you know, we look here, Tone, at the image of John Nicholls, that life-size image of John Nicholls on the wall of the studio here. And, you know, to think that Patrick Cripps towers over the, you know, the five-time best and fairest, who was a mountain of a man in his own right, it just gives you an idea of where the game's gone, you know, and... what is it now, 40 years plus since the great big Nick retired? You know, he's just a mountain of a man, Cripps, and he, as I said earlier, he attacks the footy. But Brendan Bolton, I must give the coach credit. He had a great week. You know, he had a bit of fun through the course of the week, trotting out the old cliches one game at a time in response to, you know, a little bit of media criticism, I guess, for the way he was addressing Carlton's current position. And then to hear him after the game and reflect on the performance of the players, you know, to hear him say about Patrick Cripps, we love him.
Yeah.
I loved hearing him say that. And there was another comment that really made my ears prick, Tone, was when, you know, Bolton said, we know where we're heading.
Yeah.
And it's going to explode. And... I mean, thinking back to the game now and what we saw of some of the young kids that are going to be there for the long haul, you can't help but think about that comment and realise that, you know, this isn't a case of if but when. And let's hope the when is sooner rather than later, because it is exciting and there was so much excitement out there led by Cripps.
Yeah.
I mean... And you've just identified one player in the equation so far, because as good as Cripps is... It's about the collective, and there is a lot to like about so many other players. Maybe we'll get to those shortly.
Well, why don't we do that now? Just before I do that, I'm going to get to the stats for Paddy Cripps. A match high, 34 disposals, 19 contested possessions and 11 tackles.
Phenomenal.
The tackles are amazing. One sling tackle, he gets a free kick against him. He repeats exactly the same thing about a quarter and a half later and gets a free kick.
You're not casting... Perish the very thought, Tone.
Perish, don't get me started on that. I'm like a very boring stuck record. The other players, Lockie O'Brien got a run. Oh. We saw more of Paddy Dow.
Well, yes. A comment on Lockie O'Brien. In the first quarter, what took my eye there was a period through the course of that quarter where they were actually playing through Lockie O'Brien. Lockie O'Brien was this magnificent link man off half-back that was actually running the ball along the wing and hitting targets with that glorious raking left-foot kick. And you see glimpses of that and you say, well, this is another sign of where the players in this team are going to take this club, this football club. And I just love seeing him swing on the left foot. Very... calm, collected player and does not waste a possession. He's only going to get better. This is the frightening aspect of this. These blokes, you know, what, three or four games into their careers, and who knows, you know, where this upside will actually end. It's exciting to see it. You look at, you know, moments in the game, Petrevsky Seaton, how calm, collected he is with the ball.
Yeah.
He doesn't panic, you know. He made that one stuff up, to use the King's English, you know, at the Ponsford Street end. But by and large, he is a player that he just looks like he's been there forever.
So does Zach Fisher.
Zach Fisher, a real tearaway.
Oh boy, have they... I mean, you know how sacred that number is at this club, Tone. Yes. I don't need to tell you. Yes. But it has... it has been safely entrusted to somebody worthy of it, I think. And I hope I'm not overhyping, but I love watching Zach Fisher play.
And I think we've heard now from Zach Fisher a couple of times, actually comment on the record about the significance of the Guernsey, and he gets it. He understands those who wore it before and how he as custodian, you know, must serve to protect the reputation of that number. So he's just an exciting footballer. You know, there's not much of him, but he's in and under like one of those little, you know, yappy kelpies that you see. You know, so I just love the way he plays. Then, of course, at the other end of the scale, we saw Sam Rowe complete a remarkable return with that number he did on Josh Kennedy. I mean, Kennedy was restricted to one, played out the second half, I think most second half on the bench. The cynic in me says, Tone, that that West Coast are keeping him up the sleeve for their home game next week, where Kennedy on equal career goals as Peter Sumich may get the opportunity to rewrite the record books.
Yes.
In saying that, Sam Rowe's experience and his level-headedness up back, I think, freed up Liam Jones.
Yeah, who had a great game.
Who had a great game. And it just goes to show, you know, we've got a lot of experience out at the moment, but when you get that mix right, you can see the impact that the players at the top end actually have on those that are coming through below. And it's fair to say we probably don't have that balance quite yet with the number of players that we have out. But I think Sam Rowe's return to the back line really brought welcome stability to that area that, let's face it, has been savage with the losses of Sam Doherty and Alex Silvani and to less extent, Kieran Byrne. So that's just another pleasing aspect of the performance, Tone. And then I walked out of the rooms and walked straight into Caleb Marchbank and Jakob Vietering.
Oh, yes.
And thinking, my God, these players still would come in. I mean, it's mouthwatering, the prospect, but I digress.
No, we haven't even mentioned, I'm going to get to another player whose performance was outstanding. Go to carltonfc.com.au to see Tony DeBolfo's interview. Tone, your interview with Sammy Rowe after the game. Keep in mind, Sammy Rowe hadn't played or had only just played one or two full VFL games. Am I right there?
Yes. Had a couple of runs, finding his way back, having broken down, I think it was in June of last year. So, you know, I had to go through the complete recovery. Magnificent fellow to talk to, Sam Rowe.
Oh, he's so articulate. He's fantastic.
Yeah, and really perhaps best explained where he felt the team was at. Thanks for the plug there, Tone. It is worth a look to glean Sam Rowe's thoughts. The other player I had the great pleasure of interviewing was Big H at full forward, Big Harry McKay. What'd you make of it, Tone? Oh.
Can I tell you, to go to the footy with Tom Elliott, and he'd organised it so the seats were good, let's just put it that way. So I was right behind Harry for two of those shots. They were platinum goals.
Yes.
They were the work of a master craftsman.
Yes.
They were check side, they were on extreme angles, and can I just highlight too, the delivery of one of those balls, a kick by Silvani. That was a perfectly weighted kick. It was just outstanding. He was on the break. He had options and he just delivered the ball perfectly.
It's a great call you make about Jack Silvani because, fair to say he's been under the pump of late. You know, but Jack's the sort of player, he's one of those players that doesn't need to have a lot of footy to make a real impact. And I can't help thinking that as this team gets better, Jack's going to become more of an impact player than perhaps he is at this stage. And that moment you've identified as a classic example of the canny football mouse that Jack Silvani actually has. It was a glorious kick. It actually reminded me of something that you might have seen Craig Bradley do in his heyday, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, Harry was able to, you know, stand and deliver, you know, it was so heartwarming, you know. Obviously, you look at blokes like Harry McKay, maybe Fisher, and you realise, well, perhaps another year in the weight room isn't going to hurt, you know. But just to look at the raw talent on show, you can't help but being enthused. I'm interested to hear that you said you were in the comfort zone there with Tom Elliott, Tone, because I was... I was wondering where you were at the donut van at halftime. I couldn't find you. But all in all, it was magnificent to see that young talent on display.
We need to throw the spotlight on Sam Phillips. I'm calling him Sam. But his nickname is Sauce.
Yes. You call him Sam Phillips, I call him Sauce. And as predicted some weeks ago in this very forum, Tony, I alerted you to the mouthwatering prospect of Carlton's following division being Zach Fisher, Patrick Cripps and Andrew Phillips, or, as you might prefer, Fish and Crips with Sauce. And it was there on show right. The weekend against West Coast. Didn't it work a treat?
Well, it did. I thought Phillips did a great job.
He did. He did. On Nick Knapp.
Yeah, and considering, you know, let's say the run of games, the interrupted run of games that he's had, he looked very much at home out there. He was tackling. Yeah. He was throwing himself into the
contest. And what I liked too was the way in which he was prepared to back himself with his set shots for goal from outside 50.
Yes.
Now you know if he can slot goals from there, well, that obviously brings another dimension to his game and makes him a really dangerous player. What we have to hope, you know, you think now about the players that we've spoken about most recently, Tone, if you look at Sam Rowe, you look at Harry McKay and Phillips, what we have to hope with all three players is they now get stability into their games. Yeah. We want to see them string games together and remaining fit, because it's only going to be to the betterment of the team that actually happens. And again, it's exciting. You know, it's an exciting prospect.
I also want to give two thumbs up to the game of Ed Curno, who was just a cool older head. Yep. And a current projection, I think, is obviously going to feature prominently in the John Nicholls medal come the end of the year, all going well. Now, Tone, you have what I think is the taxing duty of coming up with the 3-2-1s for Carlton's 10-point loss to West Coast Saturday at the G.
Yeah, fair call, Tony. And apologies to, you know, a handful of players, I think, who could have quite easily featured in the votes for Carlton this week. I'd probably like to, point out for an apology Liam Jones, because I thought his game on Darling was terrific. However, I've gone one vote to Sam Rowe because I thought first game back after a knee to do the job that he did on Josh Kennedy, you know, he's a great player and has given us trouble in recent times.
Oh, hell yeah. But can I tell you the joy, the delight? Did you... The appealed goal for touched, Kennedy's second goal.
Yes.
Kennedy went berserk at the idea that his goal should have been challenged.
Yes, yes.
And then when it came back that it was a point, there was quite a rousing cheer.
So everything you inferred about the men in white about 10 minutes ago, so you take back. Sam Rowe, one vote.
Yep.
I went for Fish.
Oh, he's terrific.
For two votes. And I went for Cripps. How could you not go three votes, Patrick Cripps? That's that's an extraordinary performance. Be interesting to see how the umpires do poll at the end of the year, because to me that's a three vote performance in the Brownlow, even though we didn't get the chocolates. So it'd be very interesting to see how those votes pan out in late September.
Now, before previewing the Bulldogs game on Friday night, Tone, I just want to get you to expand on something called Sir Swamp Thing.
Sir Swamp Thing, one of the, obviously, the great students of our great game of Australian rules, Tone, put something out there on Twitter, I believe, where he alerts readers to the fact that Patrick Cripps has now, for the second time, got the perfect 10 off the AFL coaches in their award system in a losing team. Now, that's those players that have done that previously more than one time to get perfect 10, the losing team in previous seasons include Gary Ablett in 11 and 12.
Yeah.
Alex Rance amongst them also, and Ryan Griffin. So Patrick Cripps is in elite company now that he's polled the perfect score to losing teams in the eyes of the coaches, who are probably football's greatest
observers,
purveyors of football flesh.
Yeah.
All right. So all power to him. We obviously, if we can get the second part of the equation right now and get Cripps polling BOGs in winning teams, we'll all be happy.
I want Cripps cloned. I don't care anything about it. Anyway, now, Tone, I guess the match committee have something of a... Well, look, they've always got a dilemma every week, I guess, but does the team stay as is going in, or is anyone coming back from injury who's made a strong case?
Oh.
I guess we won't know. At this stage, we'll know, obviously, Thursday. We're recording ahead of that, obviously, but...
Look, I can't answer the question at this stage, Tone. It's probably, as you say, a little bit early. But, however, my understanding is that Murph's still a little way away with the issue with his foot. Alex Silvani, is probably making some progress with his leg injury. Not sure who else. Cruiser, of course, is the other one. Now, I can't give you an update on the diagnosis there. You'd like to think that maybe the week's rest might have helped the big fella.
Yeah.
But it does raise an interesting dilemma. You know, if Cruz is fit, then how does the dynamic work with Phillips? If Cruz is available, I guess, do we see a little bit more of Cruz heading forward, or maybe he and Phillips alternating off the bench? It'll be very interesting to see what happens with that dynamic because, we've already spoken about how emphatic Phillips's first senior game back for the season was in that great one-on-one duel with Nick Nat. So time will tell.
He's an extraordinary athlete, Nick Nat, it must be said. We're going to preview the round 6 game between the Bulldogs. This is Friday night. It's at Etihad Stadium. It's an away game for Carlton, unlike the West Coast game. It starts at 10 to 8, as I said. It's on Friday. Now, this, you would have to say, Tone, is eminently gettable.
Oh, it is. I mean, the whole world's been mindful of, the Bulldogs, scenario, I guess, at the moment. They are struggling, it's fair to say. Carlton, obviously, yet to score a four-point result. It's going to be a most interesting affair. I would say Carlton would have come into this game having, taken a fair bit away from the match with West Coast. When we reflect back on that game, those clangers that really hurt us, plus those lapses, in red time, is something obviously that they can work on, try and address. If the team can put together a four-quarter performance on Friday night against the Bulldogs, well, you'd like to think we're going to be, thereabouts. Bulldogs, of course, will come back hard. I mean, they've been under enormous scrutiny and they will obviously want to atone. But it's going to be a most fascinating contest, I would say, Tony, this week, and looking forward to seeing how it all pans out, because what's great about it being a Carlton supporter, Tony, is that you know that these young blokes are going to get another four quarters of football into their systems, and they're only going to be better for it. The growth is going to continue, and let's hope it is fast track, because it's a mouth-watering prospect to see all these kids, emerging as bona fide AFL talent.
Well, you're right, Tone. That's what made the West Coast game so exciting, because there was just so many individual performances by young emerging players, less than 50 games.
Yes.
These kids are 21, 20, 19, that sort of thing.
Yes.
And, you can get along, see Carlton. We may not win, but you are watching, let's say, Zach Fisher in a breakout year.
Yes.
You can tell your grandkids that. Can I just pick your brain, Tone, because you are the man to ask? I'm trying to think of players who have played for both Bulldogs and Carlton, and all I can think of is Simon Minton Connell.
Oh, yeah. Now, we've had a few along the way. I think Adrian Gallagher ended up at the Bulldogs for a stint, if memory serves. Ian Robertson also had a run with the Dogs.
Mind you, statistically speaking, there's only... 3% of clubs Simon Minton Connell didn't play for.
Yes. Well, that's a point. Phil Malin's another one that
ended up
out at the Kettle. So there's been a few, and I'm sure there's others without notice that I've probably overlooked. But yes, we've had our fair degree of kennel types that have also worn the navy blue with distinction. So there you have it.
Just very quickly, Darcy Lang is returning to the VFL this weekend.
Yes.
He's hasn't played a game in the seniors. No,
haven't seen him yet.
And Levi Casbolt. This is why next week is a landmark game. Levi Casbolt's next game is his 100th. He's the first player in 41 to do it.
In the 41, and he, you may recall, we mentioned this a little while ago. He completes a sequence now that the numbers 1 to 45 included all. On the lockers all carry a name of a 100-game player. His was the last locker not to carry a 100-game player's name.
Was 45 that Franchina?
Yes, it was. Yes, okay. Yes. So finally all numbers 1 to 45 at Carlton, all the locker the lockers carry the name of at least one 100-game Carlton player. Levi completes that sequence. So
well done, Levi.
Could I say, Tone, just here as well, yeah, we should say it first, that a couple of years ago, it's pertinent to say this with the Anzac Day approaching, that Levi's distantly related to a great Carlton player named George Chalice, who represented Carlton in the 1915 Grand Final winning team and then was killed in action in France midway through the following year.
Wow.
Now, on the 100th anniversary of George Chalice's death, I approached Levi and said, look, you may not be aware, but one of your distant relatives died 100 years ago. Would you be prepared to wear a black armband into the next Carlton home game, next Carlton game, in honour of him? And he said, no problem at all. Well, unfortunately, the game before he was to wear that black armband, Levi was reported and suspended for one match, which unfortunately ruined the moment. So he never got the opportunity. But I guess what I'm trying to say here, Tony, is that in the lead-up to Anzac Day, we remember our great fallen here at Carlton. We lost 12 men, I think, in the Great War, and 5 more in World War II. So it's this particular week that we do remember them and the sacrifices they made for theirs and our country.
And that sacrifice is permanently honoured here at Icon Park. If you just come in, you'll notice on the left-hand side.
Yes, and Cheryl, the receptionist, just placed a wreath there in honour of those men to commemorate their short lives on Anzac Day this week.
Always worth remembering. Very quickly, last thing before we go, Tone. Daniel Harford has been confirmed as the Carlton's AFLW coach.
Well, that's a real coup. I mean, Half played a few games for the club, it must be remembered, having left Hawthorn. And then he had a run with the... he served as a coach of the Collingwood AFLW team until recently. So, Half, fantastic that you've seen the error of your ways. You've left the dark side and you've come to a real football club. So, well done. All power to you, pal.
We don't bear grudges here. And good luck for season 2019. Tony DiBolfo, great to have a chat as always.
I feel a lot more bright and chipper this week, Tone, talking shop with you. Let's hope this momentum continues for the team and we bring home the bacon against the Bulldogs.
Well, it's about getting games into a very talented young group.
Amen, brother.
This has been The Two Tones. I'm Tony Moakley. Thanks to our producer, Lucy, and we will catch you next week.